From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, demonology. Here's what's happening. Doctors are warning of an emerging polio-like disease in California where up to 20 people have been infected, mostly children. A meeting of the American Academy of Neurology heard that some patients had developed paralysis in all four limbs, which had not improved with any treatment. Now, the U.S. seems to be polio-free, but related viruses can also attack the nervous system, leading to paralysis. In a moment, we'll be checking in with Gary Ridenour and talk about this. Ukraine's new authorities issued an arrest warrant on Monday for the mass murder against the ousted president there, who is now on the run after being toppled by bloody street protests in which police snipers killed opposition backers and demonstrators. Russia, the president's main backer, cast doubt on the legitimacy of the new Ukrainian authorities, declaring that Russian citizens and their lives were under threat there, and contacted NATO to express concern. This is a story that could continue to get out of hand. Let's check in with Jerome Corsi on this one. Jerry, of course, you have looked at political events. You wrote the book Hunting Hitler. You've investigated Kennedy. You've looked at Iran. Tell me about the Ukraine and its significance to the United States.
Well, the Ukraine is a very critical country, and its position is a critical strategic position. The problem with the Ukraine, it was independent in 1991, but yet it's got very close ties to the former Soviet Union. Many of the provinces or sections of the Ukraine are still Russian-speaking. And the conflict is an economic one, fundamentally, whether the people of the Ukraine are going to join the EU and move to the West, or they're going to stay with the Eurasian Union and Russia. And, of course, Russia's offered a $15 billion package of relief to Ukraine, plus a natural gas deal. And the fundamental problem with Ukraine right now is that it's like many countries broke, like Greece. It's facing economic crisis. It's fundamentally an economic crisis that's affecting Ukraine right now. And I don't think Putin and Russia are going to sit by and easily watch Ukraine go to the EU.
Well, now, Yanukovych, wherever he may be, can run,
right,
but he can't hide, can he?
No, he can't. And, of course, his lavish lifestyle, the palace, which has now been exposed to the West, shows opulence and, again, disregard for the people of Ukraine. And that's going to be a rub. But the revolution, which I think could turn into a civil war, is fundamentally a question of whether the East is going to dominate, Russia continuing to dominate Ukraine, or the West with the EU. I think the EU is actually backing off. And President Obama has not shown resolve on these so-called red lines before. I mean, the Ambassador Rice to the UN was, former Ambassador Rice to the UN was suggesting that, again, Obama would support the EU and its move, to embrace Ukraine. But I'm not sure Ukraine can rely on President Obama's offer of help. Putin is much closer geographically, much closer tied to the people of Ukraine, and it's a very complex country with a lot of divided loyalties in economic crisis. And I don't see it easily going into the hands of the EU at this moment.
All right, Jerry, thanks for that. I appreciate that. The fitness tracker maker Fitbit is recalling its Force wristband after complaints about skin irritation. You might have one of these. The $130 Fitbit Force, that's what it's called, hit the market late last year and was designed to be worn around the wrist to monitor daily activity levels. Earlier this year, some Force users came forward with stories about unsightly skin rashes and contact dermatitis blamed on their tracker. Well, here's a warning, very severe warning in the San Francisco area. Pet owners are being advised to be on alert after poisonous meatballs, similar to hundreds found last July, were found in San Francisco's Twin Peaks neighborhood. 21 poisonous meatballs that may have been intended to harm or kill pets were found hidden in bushes and shrubs in that vicinity. So you best be on guard if you're walking your dog or if you let your cat out. Scientists say they have observed a record-breaking impact on the moon. Spanish astronomers spotted a meteorite with a mass about half a ton crashing into the lunar surface last September. They say the collision would have generated a flash of light so bright that it would have been visible here on planet Earth. It's another amazing story. Good thing it didn't hit us. And if a cat sneezes, grab your umbrella because that says it's going to rain. When cats lie on their backs with their mouths turned up, a storm is apparently coming. A snoring cat means bad weather. And if a cat is washing its face with its back to the fire, that means a thaw is coming. A number of meteorologists are saying, ah, come on now. But a lot of experts who know animals say this is exactly the case. Use a cat to predict the weather. It might be a little more accurate. Anyway, we come back in a moment. We're going to talk about this rare polio-like disease that's hitting California. Could that spread elsewhere? Gary Ridenour joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Gary Ridenour, of course, author of Pandemic, attended Hiram College and attended medical school in Guadalajara, Mexico. He was one of the main characters in the movie Bad Medicine and has also run a clinic for the poor, the underprivileged. And we always check in with Gary probably about once a year now, Gary, to see how things are going. But this polio-like disease in California has a lot of people scared, Gary. What can we say about it?
Well, the American Academy of Neurology, the paper was put out just on the 23rd, which was yesterday, and they reported on five children had a rapid onset of paralysis of one or more limbs, and the symptoms were worse after 2 days of onset. They treated them, but at 6 months, they still had poor limb function. They were quite concerned about this. Three of the five kids had respiratory illnesses, and they were all vaccinated. No, they were not all in a cluster in one town. Ethnicity or, you know, their earning powers of the family have no influence on this. But they found it to be an enterovirus called enterovirus 68. And with fever, muscle pain, sore throat, diarrhea, and headache is usually what you get with enterovirus 68. This is the same family where the cold viruses live. But this is a new presentation of this virus. The question is this a mutation that's just popped up and is going to disappear? Report now is 25 cases in California. But we have to remember that there's 11 million children in California at this time. So everyone's advised, you know, families and out there. If you have someone under the age of 18 that starts getting a cold and respiratory problems and starts getting to having a weak arm or a leg, that you should probably get them into the doctor because it could be enterovirus 68.
Geez, now I don't want to scare everybody, Gary, but this sounds serious.
It does. It's acting a little bit. That's why it's called a polio-like syndrome, is because of the paralysis. The viruses get attached to a cell, especially when they get into the nervous system, and they attach themselves to a site where for an immune globulin is supposed to be, and causes some sort of an immune-type reaction, which allows it to get bored into the cell, where it replicates itself off. Once again, hijacking DNA, and when the cell breaks, 10,000 viruses are then out.
Now, we have eradicated polio here in the United States.
That's true. 1978, they announced that the United States was polio-free. However, in the last 20 years, and this is kind of an interesting little anecdote, in the last 20 years, there were 152 cases of polio reported just in 20 years. Of those cases, 144 of the cases were caused by the oral polio vaccine, which has now been removed from the market and has been redeveloped into a different oral vaccine. But like I said, in 20 years, we had 152 cases, and 144 were caused by the vaccine.
Gary, I've got to ask you, I mean, what does a parent do I mean, with these vaccine problems that are out there, I mean, I had years ago, my three children, they were all vaccinated. As I look back now, I'm not so sure I would have done that.
That's a good point. My grandson's in the ninth grade, will soon be getting his third whooping cough vaccine shot because the vaccine doesn't last that long.
Yeah.
So he's headed for his third. A paper came out last week and said that if you've been vaccinated against whooping cough, you can still pick up the virus, bacteria, and be a carrier and pass it on to people who are not vaccinated.
Well, with Gary Ridenour, he's the author of Pandemic, and they are saying, doctors are saying they do not expect an epidemic of this polio-like virus, and the infection, they say, remains rare. But how do they know, Gary? How do they know that something like this, maybe it was created in a test tube and got loose? Who knows?
So that's the problem right now. They've not done the genetics on enterovirus 68 to see what has happened and why it has changed the way it is acting. The first case was Sophia Jarvis in Berkeley, and she presented with shortness of breath and wheezing, and they put her in the ICU for a few days, diagnosed her with asthma, gave her some medicine, sent her home. When mom brought her back to the doctor, she noticed that Sophia had a little problem raising her left arm, and she was readmitted and given steroids and immunoglobulins and everything else, and no change. And it's now 2 years out, and her left arm is paralyzed, and she has a weak left leg and some breathing problems. And I'd like to say hi to Sophia and just hang in there. You know, we're all pulling for you. But it makes you wonder about what's going on. Is this a vaccine interaction? The flu vaccine was changed last year. Did it interact with enterovirus 68 and cause something? Our problem is, you know, we only know about 300 viruses, and there's probably four or five times that number of viruses still out there that we've never seen.
Well, and Gary, these 20 people all infected, mostly children, in California. Don't you find that strange?
It is interesting. In 1969, which is something they should go back and look at, there was an outbreak of a polio-like outbreak with a few number of people at that time. It'd be interesting if they could go back to find somebody from 69 or some blood that was frozen from 69 and see if this is the same animal that's reappearing again. It's not seen anywhere else. There is similar-like cases with, they think, a different mutation that caused the same symptoms in Asia and in Australia the last couple of years. So, you know, it's very hard for anyone to really monitor what these viruses do, because we know they have the capability of banging into another virus that's somewhat related to them and exchanging genetic information and making them more or less infectious. So it's a constant game of change.
What else is out there, Gary, that we should be concerned about?
Well, the good old norovirus, the one that's been so famous for being on cruise ships.
Aha.
That one, you know, they talk a lot about, but nobody explains to you what it was. And the norovirus is related to the Norwalk family of viruses, but it's contaminated food and or person-to-person or aerosol coughing. Happens usually in contaminated and in contained areas like prisons, cruise ships, for instance. And it may be somebody that's handling food is sick with it and is passing the virus on into the food. Or it could be someone on board that came on with the norovirus, coughs in their hand, they go through the buffet, and they touch the handles of different spoons and scoopers, and the next person goes along, they pick it up, and so on and so forth.
Why do these viruses spread so quickly? I mean, you would think that people would have an immune system where they might be able to fight this off, but apparently not.
Well, you would if you were in a contained area where you were close to other people, and door by door there's people living and things. If you were in houses and you had some separation, the virus wouldn't spread like this. But when you got everybody stuck on the same boat and touching everything everywhere and coughing on each other and the food or somebody as a food handler is contaminating your food, it's going to happen. And they have to do more things to watch what their, how their food is handled, and also their techniques for washing tabletops and things like that. The more chlorinated type soaps and things are better at that. And, you know, it's, you know, you cut a few corners, the next thing you know, you've got everybody on the boat throwing up.
Yeah, that's true. When you wrote the book Pandemic, Gary, what was the premise of the book?
Premise was that the bird flu would, one of the viruses would mutate like it did in 1918, and that it would spread around the world, and we would lose maybe 50 or 60% of the world's population. And, you know, basically, what were we going to do after that? You know, how can you prepare for yourself with something like that coming on with no power and no gasoline? And it's like the movie The Postman, where, you know, it's in the future, people are riding horses and they're trying to sing songs, but they don't know all the words to the song. And basically, I was talking about a viral pandemic happening. And right now, we've got new viruses showing up. H5N9, I believe, is a new one that showed up. And it's in China, of course. And, you know, it just doesn't stop. It's just we get more and more new viruses all the time. And it's getting a little tough to keep up with the immunization. Interesting point, though, is that you have a child that you have, you believe immunization is not good for them. So the child has not been immunized. They will not let that child go into a public school. If you think about it, everybody in the school is immunized. So what's wrong with bringing a kid in that's not immunized if the vaccines protect them that well?
Good question.
There's a little question there about maybe, you know, the emperor's not wearing all, you know, is going around naked.
Why do so many of these viruses, Gary, start in China?
One, bad sanitation. Two, very close proximity to pigs and chickens. And pigs are the viral cookers. They'll pick up a human virus and will be a little sick for a while and actually be able to change the makeup of that virus and later pass it on to one human, and then it's passed on from there. The sanitation in the chicken industry is just horribly fantastic, I mean, like bad there. And so when you go into a market, you've got a dead chicken hanging by its foot, and you buy it and just stuff it into your bag. And sometimes they're plucked, sometimes they're not. But, you know, overall, it's the sanitation and, of course, the population concentrations and poor medical care.
Well, that's all true. Now, of course, we have lots of pig farms here. We've got lots of chicken farms. Are they more sanitary than what's going on in China?
Yeah, they are. And they're not as they are agreeably. They are very condensed and don't move around much. And there's a lot of people that are against what we do to chickens and other birds that we eat with the way we concentrate them together. One of the problems in the United States is coming up is that we're producing a lot of excrement from these chickens and turkeys and ducks, and they're having trouble getting rid of it now. And so that's a problem, but it's nowhere in comparison to what they have in China. Plus, also in China, because of paying off local officials and also the belief that the communist government's a perfect government, then obviously they wouldn't have anything of an outbreak because their form of communism is perfect and everything's taken care of.
I still think one day, Gary, we're going to get hit with some big virus, don't you?
I believe that, well, we will, and it probably will be something that's coming out that we've never even seen before. You know, people go, well, why don't they get a vaccine for the flu virus? And the problem is that the flu virus has 100 subtypes under it, and because of all those different changing subtypes, you're not able to get a vaccine for it. Whereas polio, there's only 3 subtypes, so it was relatively easy. But polio is on the way back again. Syria's got a big outbreak of polio again because of the war. People aren't getting immunized. And you go to Afghanistan and other places like that where they've had war for years and years, that because of finances, they've, you know, more or less
given up on immunizations. So, you know, we're actually coasting backwards towards the 1950s as far as world health is concerned.
All right, Gary, stay with us. We're going to take some phone calls when we come back with you. Questions for Gary Ridenour. And also, if you've had a horrible vaccine experiment and something has happened to you, perhaps you were part of a test, check in with us. And welcome back to Coast, Gary Ridenour with us this hour. We're going to take your phone calls and your stories, your questions on vaccines and pandemics, you name it. We've got it here for you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Gary Ridenour with us. This very serious story we've been following. So far, 20 people, mostly children, infected with a polio-like disease in California. But what's so bad about this, attacks the nervous system and creates paralysis. Gary, I've got to tell you, as a parent, there's got to be nothing more frightening than knowing that something like this can afflict your child. It's horrible.
I know it is. And you know, when they start off with kind of respiratory-like illness and then sudden paralysis starts to come in, you know, you come to your doctor and he may or may not be up to speed on what just came out. And, you know, you may go quite a ways before you actually get treatment for it. But the problem is there is that so far we haven't found anything that arrested the disease or stopped any of the damage to the nerves from this virus. So it's a little scary to see if we're going to try to find out what it is and can we get a vaccine for it. Interesting enough, the Salk vaccine, I have a picture of me in the first grade with the nurse pulling my pants down and giving me the first Salk vaccine.
Right in the butt. Right.
Yeah,
in the
for butt. Our county. And later they found out, 30 years later, that it's a good thing we got away from the Salk vaccine because it was contaminated with a monkey virus.
That's right.
And by now we would have had thousands and thousands of people paralyzed because of the monkey virus activating itself.
Well, I was a child of the 50s.
Me
I've
too.
Got that virus in me, Gary. It's there, and knock on wood. But let me ask you this, though, and then we'll go to calls.
Okay.
I mean, no question, something has happened. We did something right to eliminate polio for so many years.
Right.
Was it the vaccine?
Oh, I don't know. No doubt in my mind it was the vaccine, and that cut down the ability to pass it on. There was an outbreak in 1979 in an Amish community in the Midwest, and, of course, that's because they were not vaccinated. So, you know, we've said that we're now, you know, polio clear in this country, and we hope to stay that way. But it's hard to tell if you're going to get a mutation of the polio virus at any time, and we'll start all over again. You and I remember the pictures of the kids in the iron lungs. That was a machine that you know would help them to breathe because they had paralyzed breathing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to some of the phones. Okay. Cheryl's with us in San Antonio, Texas. Thanks for calling, Cheryl. Go ahead, and welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
When I was 14 and a half months old in February 1955, I had polio, and I had received the vaccine at 12 months of age. So two and a half months later, I got polio. And what I'm curious about is it a demyelinating disease? Or how does it paralyze your muscles? Because the muscles on one side of my back are paralyzed.
Well, it hits the nervous system, but go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, that's right. They still don't know how it gets into the cerebral spinal fluid and into the nervous system, but it's more destruction of the nerve pathways as the virus invades them. Once a nerve to a certain part of, let's say all the nerves to your arm have been destroyed, well, then there's no back and forth communication between the spinal cord and the muscles in your arm, even though they're not moving. And so consequently, the muscles atrophy or get smaller because there's no feedback mechanism, and naturally you can't move them. That was one of the problems with the Salk vaccine also, is that, you know, it wasn't all that good. I'm glad you're still with us. You know, the problem you got to watch for today, though, is there's a post-polio syndrome happens 30 to 40 years after you had polio.
Oh, boy.
And happens with pain, weakness, and maybe new paralysis. So that's something you've got to watch out for now.
Cheryl, take care of yourself. Let's go next to Daniel in Heartland, Michigan. Welcome to the program. Hi, Daniel.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you wouldn't have a lot to do or something to do, with the mad cow disease. We've talked about it, or you talked about it before, where they found the prion, maybe not only just in cows, but, in other species of animals that we consume. But when you allow, immigration to the point that we're allowing it to, where a lot of, from what I hear from talk shows, a lot of disease that come from South America are coming, being reintroduced into our country because of, large amounts of immigration. And then, of course, I'm not racist or anything, but it just seems like, we spend money and money and money at a lot of things, but we don't spend money on the things that we should spend it on, to make sure that things are, secured before we go ahead with doing.
Well, and Daniel, let me tell you, I think one of the easiest ways to pass these viruses, these germs, from people to people, person to person, because of airplanes. I mean, and I don't think you have to, Gary, be an illegal immigrant stealing across the border. People are coming on planes now, and they're carrying a lot of disease, aren't they?
You know, they are. And the back in the old days when you could smoke on an airplane, it cost the airlines lots of money for the filtration and scrubbing systems they would put in there to clean the air to put back, circulate back in. So when they pull the scrubbers and cleaners out of there now, someone can cough in the plane, and that virus is going to hang around in that plane and contaminate other people. So it's they thought it was really great to stop smoking on airliners, and they did it not because of the dangers of cigarettes or anything. It was costing them too much money for the air scrubbers in the airplane. So now they're just like flying coffins. You don't have any idea what's coming our way.
Gary, we talk a lot about Big Brother, as you know, on this program, the Illuminati group, the one world government. And is there a possibility that one day some disease will hit the planet and they will force everybody on this planet to get a vaccine?
That may happen. That's a good possibility. The one world government theory is in effect. United States and the Bush administration signed an agreement with the United Nations that if we got hit with something like an unbelievable virus, pandemic, that if our government was unable to run itself, that we would turn ourselves over to the United Nations to run us.
Well, and, we've heard things about FEMA camp. And body bags and things like that, they're getting ready for something. Some people think they're getting ready for civil unrest, but I think it could be some kind of pandemic that may or may not have occurred from a laboratory, and, a lot of people are going to die.
Well, I know Homeland Security is doing a lot of studies with viruses outside of Washington, D.C. And, of course, I talked about last year about the National Institute of Health getting two different researchers to make the most deadliest form of the avian flu possible that came out with an 85% kill rate. So we know now that with a gene splicing machine and a bunch of ferrets in your garage with about $300,000 investment, you could mutate the avian flu virus and let it loose anywhere. And it's quite scary that it's that easy to do now.
We go to Anderson, California, west of the Rockies. Carrie's with us. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much, George, for taking my call. And Gary, thanks for being on the program. I actually have two questions for you. The first one is, years ago, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and my symptoms were exactly the same as we're hearing in these children. And I was wondering if there's been anyone looking into the fact that it could be a vector-borne disease like Lyme borreliosis, over Bartonellosis or something like that. And then my other question is, you say that you believe that polio has been eradicated because of the salt vaccine, but how do you account for all the studies worldwide that show that every time the vaccine is introduced into another area, polio epidemic takes over?
All right, I'll let you answer that one first, Gary.
Sure. The first question let me jump to the second question first. We introduce polio vaccines to countries, and they follow through until the political and economic situations change in those companies. Rotary raised $600 million for polio plus for African nations to immunize their children. And all those areas, those countries, their names are all gone now and have gone through total political upheaval. And I doubt if there's any polio vaccinations going on in those countries. So polio's coming back. What was the first question again?
The first question was about Lyme disease.
When you come in with this kind of a, presentation, you're going to do screening for about as many infectious diseases as you can think of, and there is a diagnosis for Lyme. And the interesting thing is, too, is that it depends on what state you're in, and I believe it's from which flea. It's a deer flea, I believe. And, for example, Nevada, we don't have that deer in our kind of deer or flea in our state, so we haven't had any cases. But there are associations with some things, and they are looking at this is a good one, that one of the enteroviruses may infect children when they're young and cause them to have diabetes, type 1 diabetes at an early age because of destruction of the pancreas by this virus.
And type 1 is worse than type 2, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because, one, you've got a longer time with diabetes and fighting your sugars and things, whereas type, when you make no insulin, and type 2 is later in life where you may not be making enough insulin for your body weight, the insulin you are making genetically, the code's messed up, and it's not as good as the regular insulin you're doing. So the ones that start off young, they've got more of a battle. And thank goodness we're improving our kinds of insulin and oral medications now. You don't see people now with their legs cut off at their knees very often from diabetes anymore. When I was in training in the 70s, my gosh, it was very common to see, patients in the hospital with one or both legs gone.
Oh, yeah, or toes and other areas.
Oh, it started at your toes, and then it was so bad after the toes that the next good spot there were good blood vessels was below the knee amputation. And it was very frequent, so we've got a little bit better control on that one.
Let's go to Kevin, truck driving in Ohio. Kevin, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes, my question is that I've got a 7-year-old daughter that's been diagnosed with a type 1 juvenile diabetes.
Okay.
And she was just sent to me from my ex-wife out in Idaho. That's where she was diagnosed with it at. Since then, though, since I've had her in my care and I've checked her 4 times a day every day, I haven't had to give her the insulin that she's required because her levels have been pretty normal. And I'm just wondering if there is anything, if there's a link or something like that, according to what he's saying, with the big virus and everything else going around with these kids and everything that's going on out here in California, if there's any kind of a link between that and then possibly the insulin or whatever that they're using now.
And let me ask you one quick question, Kevin, then we'll have Gary answer this for you. Did you do anything differently to your daughter that may have reduced her those glucose levels?
All we've done is we've watched how she eats, when she eats. The school is going along and helping me with this. But according to her mother, her mother said that she had a spike at one time at 325, which I read the meter.
That's hot.
And it did spike at 325. But since I've had her, her levels have been anywhere between 90 and 120.
Is that eating or fasting?
She's eating.
Oh, that's pretty good.
She's a very good eater.
Yeah, that's very good. If you can get those levels and she's ingesting food, Gary, he's doing something right.
Yeah, and I think it is the change of the environment and watching the food that she's eating and probably has done it. And keeping those sugars down is important because if the sugars remain high, they start banging up the lining inside the arteries in your body. And then one of the first things that happens, the little bitty arteries that feed your spinal cord start to go, and you start getting numb or sometimes unbelievably painful legs. Real quick, diabetes is like your cells in your body have a cell wall, and everything can pass through it except for sugar. It's like a big BB trying to go through a screen. It can't fit. Insulin comes along and opens up the screening and lets the sugars come in. So that's why it's important to have insulin in you, because it puts the glucose into the cells where they should be. If it's not there, then glucose stays out in the bloodstream and just bangs up the arteries everywhere.
But it sounds
like you're doing a good job, and get a good doctor and stick with it.
Yeah, he really is. Let's go to Randy in Memphis, Tennessee. We'll get you to have a quick question or two. Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. It seems to me that this is very similar to Guillain-Barré syndrome. You mentioned the origin in colds and the flu vaccine and the prescription of immunoglobulins. I had Guillain-Barré syndrome back in 94 after taking the flu shot, and it was 27 days in the hospital.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that they did right with this group right off the bat is they ruled out Guillain-Barré syndrome. So that was ruled out already. But, that's something that pops up, and you spend a long time in the hospital, and you may come home and not be able to walk again, you know. But it sounds like you were very lucky.
Gary, what are the odds of something loose from a laboratory? They were playing around testing something.
In the highest level type laboratories run by the government and probably universities, these are the ones where you have to wear a space suit and everything while you're working with these viruses. There's only 150 major accidents in these laboratories per year. And 3-4 years ago, power went off in Atlanta, and at the CDC, all their laboratories where all these nasty viruses and bacteria are still being kept, all the electric locks opened up on the doors and left all their facilities open for about 2 hours. Fortunately, nobody got in there, but that's how bad things can happen, or how easy it can happen.
What about a terrorist leaking something? Possible?
Oh, yes. That's the one thing is that you take the avian flu and follow the instructions that were printed by the NIH on how to mutate the avian flu vaccine and make yourself, a good load of it and get on an airplane and fly to this country, or just let it loose somewhere at a major football game, and off it goes, and there's no vaccine to it. And if you're Muslim, they believe that, Muslims would survive Armageddon, so they would think that it would kill everyone, all the infidels.
What a mess that might be, Gary, indeed. Gary, thanks for spending the hour with us. Up next, Demonology here on Coast to Coast AM.